Polk County Sheriff Grady Judd is never at a loss for words or opinions on criminal behavior, and he's played a big role in the response to the school shooting in Parkland. Sheriff Grady Judd is our Florida Matters newsmaker.
Support for Florida Matters comes from the Hospitals of BayCare Health System, providing more than 100 health seminars, classes, and events each month. BayCare's mission is to build a healthier Tampa Bay. Register for a complimentary health seminar, class, or event at baycareevents.org.
From WUSF Public Media, I'm Robin Sussingham. Grady Judd has been sheriff of Polk County since 2004 and has made a national name for himself with outspoken views on issues like cyberbullying, legalized marijuana, mental health in the jails, and school security. He's the president of the Major County Sheriffs of America and past president of the Florida Sheriffs Association. We recently sat down with Sheriff Judd at his offices in Winter Haven. So there's a new state law, the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School Public Safety Act, that goes into effect on July 1st. And every school must have a designated armed officer or guardian when school is in session. You helped put together a plan for school safety guardians at Polk County Public Schools. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. This all began when, in 2016, I sat around the table we're at today with my staff and said, look, we've studied all of these active shooters, and here's what we know. The evil person arrives, begins the evil deed of shooting people, and ends between 2 and 5 minutes. We also know that statistically, the police response is a plus 5 minutes. The bottom line, we will never, ever, as law enforcement officers, arrive at the scene in time to stop the active shooter or assailant from what they're doing. And when we get that 911 call that alerts us, the trouble's already started. So we're going to start a Sentinel program here. Under the Sentinel plan, I can impart part of my authority as sheriff to each of the people who successfully pass this training. I can make them special deputy sheriffs for the purposes of confronting active assailants on campus. In addition to that program, we also worked with the churches and businesses creating safety plans for them. We need layers of protection, many, many, many layers of protection. So when we talk about the Sentinel program or the Guardian program, please understand that that's not the first line of protection, but it's the last best chance to save your child at school or people at church or people visiting in your business when the active shooter has shown up.
Okay, so you started working on this Sentinel program a couple years ago, and it went into a couple of the local colleges in Polk County,
Absolutely.
Southeastern and Weber.
Yes.
Right? And so those are volunteers. They're staff members of those colleges that are trained.
That's correct.
To use a firearm. How is that different from this program that's going into the public schools, the safety guardians?
There really is no difference at all. The minor difference is at the colleges, the staff members already there volunteered. And by the way, only about half of them made it through the process.
Oh, really?
Yes.
So what were the numbers there?
We had maybe 20-ish at Southeastern University apply. And by the time we finished all the training, only about half of them successfully completed.
Okay.
And the same held true at Weber International. For the Guardian program, I worked with the school superintendent, Jackie Bird, who's one of my favorite people in the world, and our school board. And what they are going to do is hire employees to deal with this new law. So the guardian is also going to deal with other aspects of the law. So really, it's still a school staff member.
I understand that you have a good relationship with the superintendent of schools, Jackie
Yes.
Bird, but there was resistance from public school officials to this whole idea. They didn't want teachers to be armed at all, and they didn't like the idea of more guns in schools. You heard this from a lot of school officials in Polk County. So how did you deal with that resistance?
Well, first and foremost, I saw this as a statewide resistance, and I was very disappointed. They unilaterally dismissed the Guardian program out of hand before they even heard what the Guardian program was. And that frustrated me, because you would have at least thought that they would have given this enough time to have heard what it was. So let me explain. On day one, out of the police academy, a Florida Certified Police Academy graduate that's passed all the state exams, and day one out of the Guardian training program, the Guardian has 25% more training in firearms than the certified police officer. The Guardian has to show a proficiency with a firearm at 5 points greater than the certified police officer. So day one out of the program, your Guardian is better trained than your law enforcement officer, according to state requirements, in the discipline of firearms. And then we're going to require quarterly training from that point forward to ensure that there's always proficiency with a firearm and knowledge of policies, practices, rules, in order to keep everyone safe. As I've explained in great detail, having a person with a firearm on campus is not something we want to do. It's something we have to do. We have to have other target hardening, security at the school. We have to have mental health interventions. There has to be several layers of protection, because the whole goal is to reduce the probabilities of the active shooter or assailant coming on campus, because we have found them far in advance. That's how we want it. The Guardian is simply, when all of that has failed and the active shooter is walking down the hallway toward your child's classroom to kill your child and every other child in there, do you want someone well-trained with a firearm to stop them? And the answer is obviously yes.
I'm sure you heard the criticism or the concern that minority students might become more easily shot because of inherent biases in the schools. They are concerned that more guns means possibly a mistake.
The person who said that should be ashamed of themselves. It is abundantly clear who the active shooter is, and that person is on campus to slaughter as many children as possible.
So Andrew Pollack, whose daughter Meadow Pollack was killed at the Parkland school shooting, came to speak to the Polk County School Board, and he was quoted as saying, "I commend Sheriff Judd for being proactive. He really cares."
I met Andy Pollack in Tallahassee after his daughter was killed, and my heart breaks for him and every other family member and friend. I can't begin to imagine what they have had to go through emotionally. But it's my duty and responsibility to do everything that I know how to reduce the probabilities of such a horrible event from ever occurring again. And that's what we're engaged in doing in the state of Florida. Subsequent to the legislation passing, now we're working with the different school systems on whether or not they want a school resource officer or a guardian. And I'm also on the commission that's investigating the Parkland event. Our goal is to find out facts and see what really happened, not subjective information, not rumors, but to find out exactly what happened and what can we do, not only to protect the schools or the businesses or the churches of this state, but across this nation.
Well, I'm glad you brought up that commission. You were appointed to a 15-member commission to look at
Yes.
school safety after Parkland. Has there been enough time? I was going to ask you, what was your main takeaway after looking at the events that unfolded there in Parkland?
Do you know, our first meeting was, basically it was an organizational meeting. We've not taken any sworn testimony. We got a 30,000-foot overview. But I can tell you this, there's a lot of work that has to be completed in short order, and I'm totally impressed with my colleagues on that commission. They're serious.
What's been your assessment of the way that the Broward County Sheriff handled that?
I can't tell from the news reports like everyone's seen, because I can't ferret fact from fiction. But that's part of what we're going to do on this commission, is we're going to see what was done right, we're going to see what was done wrong, and we're going to point out both sides of that and what's the answers going forward.
You work with other sheriffs a lot.
Yes.
What's the consensus about arming school staff?
Listen, there's not one of us that likes the idea of having to have guns on campus. But the definition of lunacy is doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. And that's what we've done since Columbine. You can't tell evil stay off of the campus and think that they are. Think about this for a second. There's no one that loves their children and grandchildren any more than I do, and I would submit that that would be the same answer from everyone that has children and grandchildren. Where is the only place in Florida that we gather our children up in great numbers? School. When you go to church or synagogue, there's someone there with a firearm. When you go into these businesses, there are people there with firearms. You don't see them. They're not out publicly, but they're there to protect you. I know that we have trained about 1,000 people in the community in this county alone last year to protect their churches, houses of worship.
You mean concealed carry permits?
Concealed carry permits. So your children are already protected by firearms when they go into businesses or go into houses of worship, but we're all of a sudden freaked out that we want someone to be appropriately trained on a school campus to protect our children? What are you thinking? We've got to have that.
We're going to go more in depth on the school resource officers in another show. But are there any sheriffs that have a completely different way of thinking about this?
Some sheriffs want law enforcement officers on the campus.
They feel like they'll have more control over that.
They believe that they're better trained.
Mm-hmm.
But here's what one must understand. Having one firearm on the campus is not sufficient. We teach every day in our academies and in our retraining that when you have a force multiplier, when you have several people with firearms at a major event, you reduce the probabilities of the event taking place. And if it does, then you certainly can bring it to an end much quicker. So even if you want school resource officers as opposed to guardians on the campus, you need more than one. So why is the guardian a good alternative to school resource officers? In this county alone, to provide school resource officers in the city and in the unincorporated area, we would need about $12.5 million new dollars. And that goes up to $16 million year one if you include the charter schools. Now, year two, once the equipment's bought, it goes down from 16 maybe to 14, and 12.5 maybe to about 10. It's just a huge expense, and that's just the startup cost. And then, as we know with any government program, it grows over the years. I can provide 32 guardians for the cost of one school resource officer. So it's a matter of looking out for the taxpayers' money and providing someone that has every bit of the talent necessary to protect the school when all else has failed.
You're listening to Florida Matters. I'm Robin Sessingham. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back. This is Florida Matters. I'm Robin Sessingham, and we're speaking with Polk County Sheriff Grady Judd. Sheriff, you've said you're concerned about the way that the jails are used in place of mental health treatment facilities, and you began a new program for inmates that are on psychotropic drugs. Can you explain about that program?
It breaks my heart to go to our SNU, our special needs unit, and see the people that are significantly mentally ill in jail when those folks need to be in a mental health facility. And I say for those folks, they don't commit crime intentionally. They commit crime because they're significantly mentally ill. And it's kind of like the chicken and the egg. I'm not talking about people who suffer some minor depression or minor anxiety or some ADHD or some of the other letters. I'm talking about significantly mentally ill people. When I started in law enforcement a few decades ago, when we took people into custody that were significantly mentally ill, the courts could sentence them and did send them to G. Pierce Woods, which was a mental health hospital in Arcadia, Florida. And there they would go until they received the appropriate counseling and medication to help them along their way. Well, those facilities don't exist anymore, and things haven't gotten better. I remember at the time, and I call them the do-gooders, you're locking them away in a hospital when all you've got to do is give them their medicine. Okay, that's great, but who's going to give them their medicine? And, oh, by the way, now they're not living at a home. They're living underneath a bridge or out in the groves or out in the mine property. So in our concern for not putting people in a mental health hospital, now they're on the streets where they're a significant danger to themselves and others. I must tell you that I'm going to do everything in my power, as long as the people allow me to be the sheriff, to look out for those that are significantly mentally ill. I'm working with Dr. McMicken's group now. Dr. McMicken, who was a dear friend of mine, my physician on my sheriff's advisory council, was the chairman. And during his final days before he died from some significant issues, he called me up and said, Grady, he says, we've got some money. He said, I've got this thought about identifying these people that are about to get out of jail and then following them into the community and having people make sure they go there, give them their medicine, because we've already got them in the jail. We've got them on medication. We're getting them counseling services. But when they get out, there's no place to go.
They go off their meds.
They go off their meds. And so we're working on that program now, and I'm totally excited about it. And Dr. McMicken, who has just recently passed away, is still helping people even after he's gone.
The money comes from an indigent care fund in Polk County.
That, by the way, Polk County overwhelmingly voted to reinstate recently, because we believe people have a right to mental health care and to medical care that need it. And
have you started the program?
They are working on the program. We're actually going to have the ribbon cutting and present the information before the Board of County Commissioners in the next few weeks. And that ties in with the direction I gave my chief of staff. He's been working on this about a year ago. We call it the special needs unit here. And I told him, I said, Chief, what we're going to do is rename this the mental health unit. And we're going to treat them like patients in a hospital, not inmates in a county jail.
So the idea is to keep them out of jail.
Absolutely.
Keep them on their medications, out of jail. Will this help crowding at all, or is this just a very small subset of your inmates?
It is a small subset of our inmates. There are many inmates that are on psychotropics or on antidepressants or on anti-anxiety medicine. They're not the ones that are committing crimes because they're significantly mentally ill. We're first dealing with the very sickest. But that doesn't mean that we don't want to help all of them, because if we can give all of them antidepressants, anti-anxiety, and that keeps them out of jail, good. But we don't see the nexus there like we do with the significantly mentally ill.
The state and the country are moving in the direction of decriminalizing marijuana. Florida residents have voted to allow the use of medicinal marijuana. You are outspoken in your efforts to keep marijuana as a prohibited substance. When so many are arguing that it's not addictive, it's not so bad, it can help people in pain, why are you still so vocal in your opposition to legalizing marijuana?
Yeah, my constituents across this county and this state voted for medical marijuana. They're my bosses, and we're going to make it work because I listen to my bosses. But I still tell my bosses, like I always have my entire career before I was sheriff, if I thought they made a mistake. And here's what I know. This is anecdotal evidence from 45 years in law enforcement. I have never once had a mother come up to me and say, "Sheriff, can you tell me how I can get my child addicted to drugs?" Not once. But there's not been a week in the last 45 years of my career that someone hasn't come to me and said, "My child's addicted. We've spent all of our inheritance. We've spent all of our retirement. We've gone through all of our insurance. We're flat broke. Help." And I see marijuana as the great stepping stone. Now, I'm not suggesting that there's not components of marijuana that can't help in certain medical issues, and there needs to be research for that. So it's not that I'm against research, and we have not done that and should have done it decades ago. But what I see is the failures. And I'm sorry, I cannot stand up and support something when I have seen it create so much hardship.
You have expressed a lot of frustration with the Florida Department of Juvenile Justice, saying, quote, "There are woefully inadequate consequences for severe crimes committed by juveniles," unquote. So I want to talk about that. And one reason for the increase in violent or serious crimes is the ready availability of handguns now, much more so than maybe a decade ago. How has that changed your job?
Well, first off, let me point out that since 2008, the spending by Department of Juvenile Justice on residential programs has diminished by $114 million. So there's that many less children in need of services, intensive therapy services, that are not incarcerated to receive those services. Between 2011 and 2012, we arrested 17 people that were juveniles for auto theft. 2015, 2016, we arrested 80. Why the uptick? Because the cut in the funding is just now gripping. The kids are going, "Hey, they don't send us away to a program anymore for stealing a car. So I wonder how many you have to steal before you get sent away." I truly believe that the majority of the kids that come through the criminal justice system, first-time offenders, second-time offenders, third-time offenders, we should have counseling, diversions, we should work with them, and they won't ever be back. They made childish mistakes. The Department of Juvenile Justice has a significant problem telling the difference in childish mistakes that are crime-based and hardcore criminals who are under the age of 18. That's my complaint. I'm all for giving breaks. But there comes a tipping point when you've got to say, this kid's a bad actor, and if we don't get him in residential treatment and locked up and making him responsible, we're going to lose him for the rest of his life. And I see DJJ failing at that.
Is it just that a lack of funding that would be the legislature's fault, or are you seeing incompetence in that department?
What I see in the Department of Juvenile Justice, and Christy Daly is a wonderful lady, and her heart's in the right place, and she's working hard.
That's the director?
Yes, that's the secretary of DJJ. She and most of her staff, the overwhelming majority of their staff, really care about the best interests of the children. But we have hit this environment that all of a sudden it's a bad thing to put a child in residential detention to help them out. And I don't know who's living that illusion, but they've successfully said, "Hey, we can save a lot of money if we don't do it." Well, you can. $114 million a year that goes back to the general fund of the state of Florida. But at the same time, when your arrests spike up, when your victimization spikes up, and when you're not helping the child be accountable and responsible, in the long run, it's costing money. So that's what I've worked with the governor, with the legislature, and certainly with Christie. And I believe they added 60 more beds this last session. Now, they needed to add 560, but I'll take 60 as a beginning.
And you're talking mainly about juvenile offenders who are reoffending.
Oh, absolutely. Times. Absolutely. Not your first time.
And also with guns.
Absolutely. And, you know, we've got a lot of laws on the books right now. I believe it's a 2-year minimum mandatory if you catch a convicted felon with a firearm. Survey the state of Florida and see how many of those 2-year minimum mandatories are being enforced or how many are pleading down. At the end of the day, it's not a gun problem. It's a criminal conduct problem.
Well, it's kind of a gun problem because so many of these 15-year-olds, 16-year-olds have handguns now. And I know I heard the Lakeland police chief speak a few years ago and said they used to do a drug bust and there would not be guns. And now almost every single time they were doing a drug bust, people there had guns. So it had gotten significantly more dangerous for them.
But where did it start? Did we hold the juvenile accountable when he broke into the house and stole the gun to begin with? Evil has to be controlled. Whether you're using a pressure cooker at the Boston bombing, or you're in a car running people down on the sidewalk. And we're not going to make this a perfect world. There's always going to be someone that does something evil and criminal, but we can reduce the probabilities if we all work together. And certainly, the child on the front end that takes something that they shouldn't, breaks into the empty barn next door, they don't need to be in a residential program. They need diversion. They need counseling. We're all in on that. But when you're out here prowling in somebody's backyard at 2 o'clock in the morning for what you can steal, carrying a gun in your waist, it's game on then, because there is not much difference between prowling with a gun in your waist and shooting and murdering somebody that walks out back to hear what that strange noise was.
I've been speaking with Polk County Sheriff Grady Judd at his office in Winter Haven. We always want to hear from you, and there are lots of ways to reach us. You can tweet us at Florida Matters or leave a comment on WUSF's Facebook page. You'll hear more of this conversation on our podcast, Florida Matters More. You'll find a link to subscribe on our website, WUSF.org, or search for Florida Matters More wherever you get your podcasts. Florida Matters is a production of WUSF Public Media. The producer is Stephanie Colombini. I'm Robin Sessingham. Thanks for listening.